Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight I'm proud to bring you ComWest Speaks with Setna ComWest of Kemet. Greetings and welcome, Setna. How are you tonight?
I'm well. Thank you. Blessings to all of you. Tonight's show I want to dedicate to my favorite Catwoman, Julie Newmar, and I know she's listening. So thank you, Miss Julie. God bless you. Tonight I'm going to discuss the ritual of Bash. I will explain what I'm going to do, and then I'm going to lead you in a prayer to the cat goddess Bash and do the ritual that will be done May 7th, which is Sunday. Now, I want you all to know that May 7th is the beginning day of the festival of Bash. All over Egypt, all over the Egyptian, Greco-Roman world, people brought cats to the city of Bubastis to be blessed and consecrated. It is also a place where people brought their children, if they had dogs or chickens or whatever they had, that would be blessed, because Bash is a patroness of those who cannot speak for themselves. She is not only a lovely mother goddess, but she's also a warrior for those who cannot speak for themselves. A song comes to mind, bless the beasts and the children, for in this world they have no voice, they have no choice. Bash will speak up for them. She is the earliest that I know of patroness of those who cannot speak for themselves. And tonight I bless and bring forth this energy to thank her for her wonderful, wonderful work all these centuries. So before I start, have you anything you want to say, Hercules?
No, I'm looking forward to honoring Bast during the Year of the Cat, as you had pointed out in an earlier conversation. So really looking forward to what you share today.
I know that we cannot use the song that I wanted to use. Al Stewart, God bless you for the Year of the Cat. That's really cool. But, you know, here we go. So without further ado. This is a sistrum. This is an instrument that was used thousands and thousands of years ago and now in honor of the cat goddess. This instrument looks like a tambourine, only it's on a handle. My handle, I wish you could see, is actually an image of the goddess Bast. You'll see two goddesses that hold this symbol. Both of them, Hathor and Bast, carry this symbol. When I do a ritual, I will be doing a ritual for the summer solstice out in Long Island. You're all invited. On the 22nd, I believe, of June. Now, today we have to be careful what we say and what we do. Also, I want to caution you, Mercury gas is in retrograde, so anything that could go wrong already has. However, I'm in a protected space. I'm in my beautiful altar. I'm surrounded by my Neteru, which are the gods and goddesses of Egypt, so I can explain to those who may not know. In front of me is a 3-foot statue of the cat goddess Bast, staring directly at me. Her eyes are made of amber and emeralds. On her head is a beautiful, beautiful pink jasper, which is really incredible. And she's wearing my collar, which you've seen on Zoom about 2 or 3 episodes ago, which was made for me in Alexandria, alabaster and scarabs. Each scarab has on it the name of a particular pharaoh that I chose. They go from Ptolemy Sotir, which is Cleopatra's great-great-great-great-grandfather, to Djoser, who was the first king that had the first step pyramid made by, of course, the architect Imhotep. So now, are we ready? I want you all to relax and focus. I get my sistrum going. First, I will anoint, and I am, with oil, which has got catnip in it, and cedar, cypress, amber, and bergamot onto the head of the statue. And I say to she, Lady of the West Nile, I evoke you into my altar. And I ask for the protection of Isis in the northwest, of Nice in the northeast, of Nephthys in the southeast, of Selket in the southwest, and Meshta, Hapi, Kevsanuf, and Duabutep, lords and masters of the altar space, hear my will addressed to thee. Hear my will addressed to thee, and as my will, so must it be. And I take the system again. 1, 2, 3, 4. I am now lighting a charcoal, self-igniting charcoal, on which I will put amber, frankincense, Kulfi incense, which is an Egyptian incense, and that will smoke into the air and fill my room with an amazing aroma, but also opens the synapses and brings you better into concentration for the goddess. Take your breaths and relax. If you have around you somewhere an image of Bast, which is wonderful, focus on that image. O sacred High Lady, daughter of Isis, daughter of Isis Sothis, I summon thee forth. I ask that you preside over my presence today and give it grace and strength and listen to what we are saying and asking. We are asking for peace. We are asking for protection for those who cannot speak for themselves, children, abused children, cats, dogs, pets, all that cannot fend or speak for themselves. We invoke you, we evoke you, so that you will come forth and make for us a bond that will protect these beings and ourselves. Time goes by, so must it be. Again, I use my siskram. Imagine about 1,000 of these by clean-shaven-headed priests wearing leopard robes and pleated linen, big collars, bracelets on their arms and their legs, barefoot, standing before huge images of the cat goddess, incense from all directions, and behind them are thousands and thousands of worshippers who are holding up little images made of woven papyrus. Later on in the Ptolemaic times, Bast would have had a fit because what they used to do, and I think it's horrible, was raise kittens till they were about a year old and then mummify them and wrap them. And I think that does disservice to the goddess. Of all, the goddess who protected cats suddenly is being worshipped by mummified cats. Millions were found, I'm not kidding, millions in the city of Bubastis. They just kept uncovering many, hundreds and hundreds. And the bad part was the priests in that time, and this is in the time of the Ptolemies, the priests were very corrupt. So sometimes you got a cat mummified. Sometimes you got straw. Sometimes you actually got a rat. So, you know, instead of a cat. Or they got, you know, sand and mud or whatever, and they thought they had a cat in there because that's what they were told by the Ptolemaic priests, the Greco-Roman priests, that it was, this is a sacred animal, sacred creature. Before that, in the city of Bubastis, from Dynasty 1 all the way up to probably Dynasty 30, which is, or 31, which was Neftonibus, people came in the millions. But they came and they brought live cats to be anointed and blessed, and the city was literally covered in cats. And there's a story during the time of the Ptolemies that a Roman, probably I would say after Cleopatra when she died, the Romans were riding a chariot through Bubastis, and one of them ran over a cat. The penalty in Egypt for killing a cat, this is why this is ironic, was death. Mm-hmm. So I think that's horrifying. I mean, here, they were mummifying them. That was okay. But running on one over in the street was a death sentence. This doesn't make any sense to me, but this is after Egypt fell, basically. In the time of the pharaohs and all the way to Cleopatra, which was the end of the Egyptians, if you had a cat, pet cat, and it died, the traditional way to have mourning, and you won't like this, Hercules, was they shaved off their eyebrows. And what if they didn't grow back? I mean, they had eyebrow pencil back in those days, believe it or not. But
yes,
I find that a very, well, they had, Egyptians invented the cosmetics we're using even today. Eyeliner, eyeshadow, blush, everything. The only one that didn't was lipstick, and that was invented by, can I say this, Assyrian prostitutes. And they wore different colored lipsticks, and the way they could tell who did what with who was lipstick, and it wasn't on their collar, okay? Yeah, drop your crowd. Oh, so number one did that, huh? Okay, cool. So, but that's not cool. I mean, that's one way to have shades of lipstick, but my goodness. But to get back to Bast, so
okay.
Now, I don't know if you can feel the energy, but my room feels crowded. I have hundreds of spirits in this room now paying homage to the cat goddess. And again, O great cat, sign of pharaohs, weave your spell across the land, verity and peace. Protect those who cannot speak for themselves. Again, Lady Bast, we call on thee. I wish you could see what my incense is doing. It's going poof into the air really high. I'm throwing onto the charcoals, I'm throwing an oil, which I got in Montclair. And it's incredible, incredible oils that I got with the business there. And they're amazing, amazing incenses. And this is making these big plumes of incense smoke. My neighbors upstairs must be choking. And it's amazing what this is looking like. The eyes of my statue are oddly looking up at me now. I know when I summon the cat goddess into my, I use all of my statuary as vessels, as focusing points, as energy points that the deity can actually feel that I'm here. I do not worship my statues. If they break, I glue them back together again. I don't think of them as, how do I say this, idols that I worship. They're artwork. I mean, half of these were made in China, for crying out loud, you know, by the Summit Collection. So they're not, to me, they're not, they're, what the Buddhists would say, they're just things. I've broken more, I'm clumsy, I've broken more statues than I can ever tell you. You know, I've got more wounded Isis or Ra's or Horus's with a, or vast statues with one ear that have fallen and broken, which I think is, you know, not very, very kind to the gods and goddesses. But again, I want to stress that I am not like those who kiss the feet of idols. I don't believe my statues are the gods and goddesses. I believe they use that energy. But I don't believe that statue is the goddess or that statue is the god. And I want to stress that.
That's something that comes under discussion in our theurgy forums, because theurgy is basically the act of raising your consciousness to the highest you can conceive and then anchoring it here in yourself and someone else as a medium or in a statue or other item. And then it influences the world around you through that. And different people have different interpretations of how the statues should be treated. But to me, they're just statues as well. They're just items.
It's exactly, yes, it's exactly my point. I don't want anybody to think, oh, my God, my statue fell off the shelf. And it happens, right? Oh, my God, the gods are angry with me. No, just get another one. I mean, I grow attached to my things because I'm a Virgo and we're very material people. But I do break things. And I will replace them and put the energy back in there. And what I usually do is if it's broken, like beyond the point, I will throw it out. To me, the energy, the spell that you put in that energy, and this is working with your theurgy, if you've broken the statue, broken a crystal, the spell is broken. Therefore, you must put that into something else. Don't you agree, Hercules?
I agree.
Right.
Yes.
So I gave you a crystal. I empowered that crystal with very strong energies on my, I call it my southern altar. It's in the front of my building, front of my house, where the sun will beat down on them. And I have different deity statues in that altar. I have Ptah, I have Lord Amun, I have a Ra, I have Isis with Horus on her lap. different statues in that altar than I do in the one I'm currently with right now. Behind Bast right now is a huge statue I have of a winged Isis. She's kneeling, and in front of me now is that 3-foot statue of Bast. Isis is Isis Sotis. She is the mother of Bast. She and Ra conceived Bast. Bast is a, of all the Western European nations have gods that are the sun, Apollo, Helios. All of them are sun gods, correct?
Right.
In Egypt, Isis, Sekhmet, Bast, and hundreds of others are solar goddesses. Bast, when Isis meets with Ra and becomes his mistress, she conceives Ubasti, Bast, the cat goddess, and she's called Sotis, and Sotis in Egypt is the North Star, the dog star. So you have it begetting a cat. It's a contradiction in Western terms, but she brings the energy, and it's a falcon and a dog making a cat.
Wow.
I find that unusual, because that's what, well, Western thought doesn't accept such things. But as we said last week, the gods, the Niteru, the gods and goddesses, are shapeshifters. They can be anything.
They can be anything.
Isis has been known to be a bird called a kite. Bast is sometimes not only a cat. Sometimes she appears as a cobra. Sometimes she appears as a falcon, too, because her brother, after all, Horus, well, her stepbrother, half-brother, is a falcon. She can transform into any form. She prefers to be a cat. Why? People are more comfortable. People are more amiable to a cat. Every house in Egypt had a house cat. But the cat in Egypt wasn't just a pet. When the men would go out into the marshes and hunt ducks, and you'll see many, many hieroglyphs in many temples, and many tombs also, of cats on top of the reeds grabbing the duck that the man has shot an arrow or a spear at, and the cat will retrieve the duck. Modern house cats would be like, seriously? Are you kidding? You want me to do what? Because they're not working cats anymore. They're putty cats. They're, you know, cuddly, lovable, hopefully. Domestic, they're no more these days than basically an animated teddy bear. Wouldn't you think, Hercules? They're not putting to work anymore.
No, they're not. There's a Greek song lyric that says, "Kitora egine aposoi ketapsaria de tatroi." It talks about a cat, and now the cat has become a part of the family and it doesn't eat fish anymore. So that expresses that what you shared.
I mean, I know there's a fellow I know. His name is Jeremy Acorn. I'm sure that's not his real name. But Jeremy Acorn is very, very known in the circus industry. Jeremy Acorn has 9 or 10 black and white and red cats. And they jump through hoops. They walk through fire. They walk along tight ropes. They do all kinds of things that, you know, you see dogs and bears doing. And they do it better. Their balance is better. They're incredible. They stand on their hind legs and dance. They do all the things those fancy poodles do. And they look at them like, ha-ha, I'm a cat and I can do this too. Meow. And it just shows that they can still do these things. There's also an agency in Los Angeles, of course, that raises Maine Coon cats. Maine Coon cats are about as big as a beagle. They're very large cats. They're large cats. And anyway, these particular cats are trained to look after children. They're kind of like Nana in Peter Pan. They will not let the kid out of the room. They'll stand there and look at him like, I don't think so. Little baby kids. And they will also, it's really weird, certain cradles, small cradles, rock the cats in the cradle. The cat will rock the cradle. And they've been trained to do this.
I love that.
It's a very weird little agency, and they're not. A lot of people don't want pets around children, babies, young children. But these people, California, anything is possible. So these people have these this agency. It was brought to mind to me by a Bath priestess. She lives in Orlando, Florida, and she is a high priestess of the cat goddess. I always bring her up, and it's kind of like a broken record nowadays, but the most powerful of all high priestesses in ancient Egypt was Cleopatra the VII. As far as we know, she was not only Isis, but also well known to be a priestess of Bast. She would take her huge statue, which of course was gold and inlaid with many, many jewels, and would take a trip by a barge, and then also a huge litter, kind of like a giglio that they do in the Italian festivals. Mm-hmm. Do you know what a giglio is, Hercules? Yeah, it's a litter. It's a litter carried by about 50 or 60 guys. Well, there'd be a gigantic shrine to Bast on this litter, this giglio. And they would carry this from the boat from Alexandria to Bubastis, which is on the far side of the cataract. It's a long walk, but you've got like 100 guys carrying this thing. The statue of Bast probably weighed maybe 10 or 15 pounds. This shrine probably weighed 200 or 300 pounds. So even 200 or 300 guys on walking 4 or 5 miles, that's a lot. And it was very painful. And usually these were the priests of Bast and priests and priestesses of Bast. The priestesses would usually hold the sistrums and beautiful plume fans, smaller images of the cat goddess, jewelry. We have a necklace called a menyet, which is actually a rattle. And it's a prayer. It's a prayer rattle. It's also worn by priestesses of Hathor. But this would be carried high. Bast and Hathor apparently are very close energy-wise and have always been close. So
I can see
that was brought to the shrine. The Bubast, the great inner temple was opened. The shrine box was picked up and brought to all the way to the back of the temple. Now, this is where the public could not see. All Egyptian temples had one thing in common. They had a peristyle, which was the outer one, where the outer temple, the lesser priests and priestesses, and the public would be standing outside worshiping. And there are people giving hymns and chants to the people that they're chanting. And there's incense going on the outside, and there's torches, because it's very dark in those temples. And they're going all the way back. So a priestess and a priest will be carrying holy images and holy icons to the goddess. And they walk to the back of the temple, and then the shrine doors are opened. The golden jeweled statue of Bast is put into there. It's given a collar. All statues of Bast have one or two earrings, sometimes one through the nose also. See, they were into piercing long before we were. And they have all that on the statue. They adorn the statue with jewels. It gets a beautiful cloth. Usually like a pleated gown around its shoulders. It's anointed with oils. It's aspergered with high sacred holy waters. It has been censored with incense. What's happening in my house and all around the people of my temples are that they open up the naus in the temple. A person will kneel before the statue. In front of the statue, and here I'm doing the same thing, is a cup. The cup has sand in it. I don't have Nile sand or Egyptian. I wish I did. Mine came from Jones Beach, I hate to say, in Long Island. But I'm a Long Islander by birth, and that's, you know, still where my heart is. And all you Long Islanders know that. That's, you know, I'm a transplanted New Jersey guy, but I'm a Long Islander. It's my heart. And I have my sand to remind me where I come from. And on that sand, I take a small piece of papyrus, which I'm doing right now. I'm going to cut that. Okay, you can hear me cutting it.
I hear it.
That is now going to be, I've written on it a prayer. I wrote on a prayer for all of us that are working with you, Hercules.
Well,
you've been an amazing friend and a great producer and a wonderful mentor And I want only amazing things for you and for everybody that's working with us, because we're all working so hard to make good things happen. So I'm going to now burn this. Where's my lighter? Okay. I'm going to burn this. Taking my lighter out. Give me a sec.
Okay. And I'm honored by your words. Thank you very much, Cedric.
You have no idea what you mean to me. And I want to say that to everybody. He is unbelievably generous, loving, a dear, dear, dear friend. And I thank all the Nateru. I'm getting, oops, mascara time here. My eyeliner is running, Hercules, damn you. But I want to thank you. Well, I'm an Egyptian. Any ritual, by the way, that's true. I'm wearing oils. I have on my collar and all my, if you saw me, you'd die. I have a cobra, my cobra crown on. I'm wearing Egyptian bracelets and enough rings for Liberace. and I have, around my eyes, I have dark navy blue ground lapis lazuli coal, which I was given to by a friend from Alexandria, from Egypt. And it's real lapis. And I'm glad it's not stinging my eyes. I have blue-green eyes, and they're very sensitive. But so I can wear lapis lazuli over my eyes. How do you like that for cool?
Awesome.
But so I'm burning now the affirmation, the prayer that says, Lady Bass, Dua, which is the word meaning blessing, Dua Baste, Ubasti. And I'm not going to do the rest of it in Egyptian, but it says, thank you to all for you and bless you. And please, we ask you to carry with you into the higher forces our wishes, hopes, and dreams for success, prosperity, and how shall I say this, fulfillment of our wishes for the coming seasons and to success in our endeavors. And that's burning now, which is kind of cool.
Thank
and when
you.
That burns to ashes, I will take that in. You know how the old song goes, taking it to the streets? I will take this outside tomorrow morning. It's raining now. And I will put this into the ashes so it goes out into the world so that the energy goes out there. And now what I will do, I have a libation, which in all traditions is liquid. Mine happens to be, I don't drink alcohol, so I'm using pomegranate juice. And I say, Lady Bass, bless this vessel. Imbue it with thy energy and let me take this within myself so that I shall gain thy blessings. And I take a sip. I'm sipping. And yes, my drink has ice in it. ICES, not ISIS. Okay? ISIS, not ISIS. Okay. I can't help it. I have to be silly. That's Michael. Now I have a piece of pita bread. That's kind of in your honor, Hercules. I have a piece of pita bread with a little bit of spread of hummus, which, of course, all over the Mediterranean is a staple thing. Hummus is in Greece. It's Egypt, Syria, Israel, everywhere, Arabia, Libya, all the way to Morocco. And I say to her, this is my offering to you. Bring to it Heka, which is Egyptian magic, so that this will be able to imbue me with the energies that I can go forward and be nourished. And I'm going to take a chunk out of that and eat that. And I will finish. Again, I'm going to take the sistrum. The sistrum is like a summoning tool. Every time I do this, I think of the scene in The Egyptian, which is a crazy, we're going to do that in Sun and Sandals one day, but it's a crazy scene where the Pharaoh is walking in and they have hundreds of priests with sistrums shaking, and Pharaoh Akhenaten, who I can't stand, and Nefertiti walk up to the altar. So I'm bringing that energy forward. I'm feeling the energy of thousands of priests coming to my altar and kneeling before Bast and saying thank you to her for all that's gone before, the year before, and what we are expecting or hoping for in the present and future. And I'm asking all of you to take a moment and also focus and concentrate on the cat goddess. Let her energy come to you. She's friendly, loving, caring, generous, protective, and mothering. Uvashti, come to them all. We come to them all. Uvashti, come to them all. I so summon thee forth. I so summon thee forth. My eyes are closed. I am seeing before me an image of a cat, a tall, beautiful cat, and she's opening her eyes and looking right at me. Part of the ritual I also do is with my statue, and this is in the way of mummification. I have before me a black tool, which is called an ADZ, A-D-Z. If she were a mummy, they would do what's called the opening of the mouth ceremony. Mouth, not mouse. I know we're doing with a cat, but this is not a mouse. So, you know me, humor. Okay, so first I will say, Lady Bast, I take my ADZ and I open thy ears that you may hear me. Lady Bast, I open thy eyes that thou not seest me. Lady Bast, I open thy nose that you may breathe in the energies. And Lady Bast, I open thy mouth that you may meow and you may speak to it with us. And I feel your energy now. You've entered the vessel, which is the statue, to bless all we have done. And we say thank you to you for what you've given us before and for all the generosity and kindness that we feel from you. So must it be. And I feel the energy, I hope you all do, I feel the energy coming through to me, to my heart chakra. And I know she's with me. And I know she's with all of you as well. Because she can bring her energy into thousands of beings, because let's face it, there are cats everywhere. And anywhere there's a cat in the vicinity, the energy will come from that cat to right to you. And she's that strong a goddess. And I take great solace and joy that she's able to do this. As we've gone throughout the years, for the centuries, Bast has gotten stronger, as the sacred 12 have now on Olympus. So in Bubastis, in Luxor, in Karnak, in Abydos, in Aswan, in Heliopolis, in Memphis, all and Kumumbo and Edfu and all the temples that are in Egypt, all this energy is coming back stronger. Modern Egyptians have contacted me. Many, many modern Egyptians are saying, help us, Setna. Help us learn about our ancestors. Yes, we are very loyal to Allah, but we want to know where we're from. We want to know who we are. You know, where did we come from? What can you do to help us? And I'm very grateful as an ambassador to the Nateru to tell Egyptians, modern Egyptians, their story. And it really touches my heart that I'm able to do this, because an Egyptian teacher was giggling with me the other day. She said, we don't teach ancient history. It takes too long. I mean, you have 7,000 years of history to tell the poor little kids. And, you know, by the time they're finished, they'll need to be mummified. So they cut really quick to it. They'll talk about the original Set pyramid, then they move to the big pyramid, and then they jump way ahead to Ramesses II, and then it's the Cleo, and then that's the end of it. That's all they talk about. There's 32 dynasties in Egypt, and it does span about 7,000 years. So it's not like it's a hard thing to do. And I hope you don't mind me bouncing back and forth with fun facts and information while I'm doing the ritual. The goddess wants me. I'm a high priest. The goddess wants me to inform and educate while I'm doing ritual. But I want to close the ritual now. Lady Bast, we thank you for your presence. We thank you that you have given us a gift of your joy and your protection and your love. You now to disperse that energy throughout the world. Make them all understand how wonderful your love is. Lady Nephthys, Lady Isis, Neith, and Selket, we ask you now to move back to your lovely realms and watch over us just the same, but help us to close this altar. Meshta, Hapi, Kansanuk, Duwabutep, my brothers of Horus, close the outer doors that no harm will come to anyone who listens within the sound of my voice. Hear my will addressed to thee, for as my will, so must it be.
Wow. What a powerful ritual.
The temple doors are closed. We return back to our normal, natural life.
That was amazing, Setna.
I edited the ritual, of course, because in the interest of time, things can go on for hours, and we don't have hours. But now, throughout all of the time, I want to talk to you about little time is left, about Bast. In the beginning, she is not shown as a pussycat, a little house cat. In the beginning of her worship, the western deserts of Egypt, you have a wild spotted cat, a wild cat, like a puma or a jaguar. But in Egypt, it has tufted ears like a lynx, but it's more of a lion. And she is a warrior, and she is vicious protector of the western desert. And what happened was she moved, and the other gods and goddesses saw how amazing she was. And she went from a lioness to be able to sit in Isis' lap. And so she transformed herself into a domestic cat. Because the one thing that's wonderful about a domestic cat is it's portable. I mean, you can't take a lion. Well, you can't take a lion on a plane, can you? And many times I traveled with Belle and Shabti, my cats, everywhere. They were, you know, they were amazing. They would travel everywhere with me, and they were a Russian blue and a Siamese now, I'm afraid. But Belle lived to be 23 years old, which is quite old for a cat, and Shabti was 18 years old. She was a domestic tabby short hair with a collision somewhere in there of gray Russian blue. So she was a beautiful gray-blue cat with white and gray stripes, and a white chin and emerald green eyes. Belle was what they call a seal point Siamese. She had a cocoa face and a mink-colored body and blue eyes like the sky. And like me, she never shut up. I am known to be very talky, and I admit that. And she was perfect cat for me because we could have conversations. And I loved them both very dearly. They were my as a witch, they were my familiars. They were my magical children. And I was very lucky to have them in my life. I am now hunting for another cat. If anybody knows of a big orange Maine Coon, that's what I'm looking for, a Maine Coon kitten. And I'm home now because I'm semi-retired. I have the time I have to take care of a cat. So I'm asking everybody out there, please hunt for me for a large orange, rusty-colored Maine Coon, and a kitten will be fine. Even a yearling I'll take, or whatever, even an old, slightly older cat. I'm very cat friendly, and so is my house.
Awesome. I hope it comes your way.
When the time is right, it will. Let me tell you something. I prayed to Bast for Shabti, my cat. And Shabti means a little companion or a little helper. I dreamt the night before I got her of a gray tabby. And I went to the North Shore Animal League with a friend of mine, my friend Ed, and we went there. And I looked at all these cats there in their cat house, so to speak. And I didn't connect with any of them. I was upset. We went there on purpose just to get this cat that I had in my head. Well, out comes this big old tray with cages on it, and shivering and decrepit looking. It's this little gray cat, and she's shivering, and she's covered, and she's scared. And I looked up at her, and there she was.
Mm.
And you know how it is. I put her in my arms. It was over. She was my cat. Forgive me for being over emotional for a second here. But it was the cat I saw in my dream. Exactly the same cat. What I didn't know was she was just brought, literally that moment, brought into the North Shore Animal League in Port Washington. And they told me, oh, Michael, she has ear mites. So I took care of her for, I think it was 3 weeks. She had to clean her ears out. And she loved me, and I loved her. So it was very easy to do this. And I took her back. And this is funny, but it's not funny, and I'm kind of faulting them for this. They said, you know, she has to be spayed, because they do that at North Shore Free.
Yes.
You have to give them a donation. Back then it was $35. Well, this is 1989 I got her. Anyway, I brought her in, they shaved her belly, and they went, and they sedated her, okay? And they came into the waiting room, and they said, Michael, we don't know how to tell you this. She's already been spay. So I'm thinking, language I can't say on the radio. And I said, well, when will she wake up? They said, about an hour or so. I took her home, and she had a shaved belly. And thank God they didn't cut her open. They saw the stitches.
Yeah.
But can you imagine? Whoever brought that cat into the North Shore didn't bother to tell them that she was already fixed. I was very sad for her. I really was.
Yes, of course.
And then going forward, my friend Daniel and his wife Nancy brought me Belle Belle. They had one of Nancy's sisters. She had three sisters. One of Nancy's sisters worked at North Shore about a year after I got Shabby. And they said, five Siamese cats were brought into, and this is in the winter, freezing cold winter of 1990. We have five Siamese cats. They threw in an orange crate in the middle of a freezing cold January storm. They were all huddled together. They were all maybe 3 weeks old or 4 weeks old, however old, you know, 4 weeks old. They were Seal Point Siamese, purebred, but they had apple heads, not the current bullet head that people like.
Right.
So, which is, but you know, in order to get a bullet head, you have to have two round heads make it. It has to be in there. That's where they come from in the first place. The bullet head was a modification, a human modification. Anyway, this litter came out apple head, so they threw them away like garbage. There were two twin boys. There was a boy and a girl. And another one, a smaller one. The smallest one didn't survive the night. The other four were huddled in the corner of this orange cart that someone put into the clothing drop somewhere in the middle of the night, just dumped them like garbage. So Susie, my friend Nancy's sister, or Jackie, said, Michael wants a Siamese cat. So, and I did, but before I got Shabti. I thought, oh, my God, I hope they get along. And she brought me Belle Belle, and it was over. Same thing. She looked like Pie Wacket from Belle Book and Candle, that classic Siamese cat. I had to have her. And we became instant friends. I will say my Russian Blue was not all that enthused with her at first. Belle Belle was a terror. She ran around. I came home. I went away for a week, you know, 2 weeks after I got her, to Florida. My cousin Mario, who basically looks like Fabio. Everybody was nuts over Mario. He came and he stayed over, and he babysat my cats. And I came home. He had left like 10 minutes before I got there. He figured it would tell him, okay. I came home to a cloud of toilet paper in my bathroom, and Belle jumped into my arms. Daddy! And I saw this toilet paper flying all over the place because she had shredded the toilet paper roll. And, you know, anybody else might have been furious. I couldn't be mad at her. She was a baby, and she was adorable. So that was that. But it was right out of, you know, Lady and the Tramp. We are Siamese, if you please, and they are mischievous cats. They really are. But I loved her very much, and she was a joy for 23 years.
Wow.
People don't have pets that long. I am, folks, a very good pet daddy. Don't ask me about plants, though. I have a black thumb. Oh, my God. I could kill a silk plant.
Athena's good with plants and animals. She has a green thumb with plants. She plants her gardens, and her flowers and her food that we eat in terms of vegetables. And she also, she's like the mommy to all our animals, past, present, and I know future. So they follow her around and interact with her much more than they interact with me.
Well, when I lived in Florida, I had iguanas. I had a tarantula. Her name was Garbo. I had a 13-foot Burmese python. I had guinea pigs. And I had a cat whose name was Cheshire, who looked like a Cheshire cat. Mm-hmm. And I took the cat with me. Unfortunately, the tarantula ate the scorpion, which was, you know, a mistake. And the iguanas I gave to my brother, who had them for years and years. I think they lived 15 or 20 years themselves.
Wow.
And they were Hedda and Luella.
Nice
they were
name.
Really, because, well, you know, what do iguanas eat? Lettuce. So she was Hedda Lettuce. And I didn't know back then that there was a wonderful, famous drag queen who I'm also very friends with, whose name is Hedda Lettuce.
Oh, okay.
At the time, had green. She used to wear red wigs, and now because she's a lettuce, she wears green. But so I always had cats in my life and dogs, and the Burmese python that my mother was horrified at. But, you know, I'm an Egyptian, and snakes just kind of go with me. So there was that. And I loved my python. I didn't take her with me when I was living and coming back to New York, because I knew if it was too cold or, God forbid, there was a blackout, that she'd freeze to death. So I gave her to a very famous herpetologist, a snake expert, who had her, I think he said 30 years. Remember, this is 1985 that I gave him away, and she was 13 feet by then. And when she passed, I don't want to scare anybody, she was 26 feet long.
Wow.
And what she ate was the neighbors. No.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
I didn't want to know what she ate. She probably ate pigs and goats, because she was a huge serpent. But he said even as large as she was as docile as when I brought him to her. She was a big mush. When I had her, she slept on my bed with me. She would curl her body around my leg. She rested her head on my shoulder blade, and she purred like a cat. She was the sweetest thing. Everybody else I knew was petrified because she was such a large snake. I had no problem. Animals and I never had a problem. They know that I am connected to the gods and the goddesses. They know that I am a high priest somehow, and that I'm here to take care of and be steward for everything around me. That's my duty. It's all of our duties. But as a high priest, I take it very seriously.
Wow.
We have about 10 minutes.
You spoke today a lot from your heart, and did a wonderful ceremony to Bast, and your heart was open, and you spoke with the goddess's presence surrounding you and surrounding us. Very powerful.
And I know you felt it. I knew that your energy was connecting with her. I knew it. I could feel it.
Yes, I could feel it.
And I wanted you to know that I could bring that energy about. You are an amazing Olympian. I am a Niterem, a Niteru. I follow that energy to the T. I'm anointing my statue now. You're going to think I'm crazy, but all of my statues have makeup on them. I am a makeup artist besides being a priest and psychic. And so I believe part of my comes through makeup. I always have. All my statues, all of my paintings, any of my artwork, all have makeup in them somewhere. But I feel like it imbues that object or painting or whatever it is with my energy too. So that I'm part of what I'm doing. That's what I'm trying to say. And I don't know if others do that. I would like to hear from the people around us and listening, what they do to personalize and bless their particular objects that they use on their altar. I'd like to know if they also use makeup or an oil or an incense that they've made themselves. So I'd like, folks, I would like your feedback. I'd like to know what you do. I'd like to also know if there are any questions you have, any things you'd like to help, you'd like to study. These are the things I'm working with now. I am teaching very in-depth courses. I will be teaching very in-depth courses in the worship and the practice of ancient Egyptian ritual, temple ritual, and ancient Egyptian magic. And I want to stress something. Those are two different things. Not all the temples work with magic. A lot, many of the temples work with just worship, just prayer, not doing things like healings or not doing things like bringing lovers together or removing negative energy, removing negative people. I don't like to use the word curses. I don't believe in that. I don't think that anybody should curse anybody else. I think that's very negative, and I believe that will come back on the person doing the cursing. And I want to stress to everybody, don't do that. Don't set out to do harm. I follow this. It's a thing that Aleister Crowley and many of the other magicians of the late 20th century said, do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law, but that it harm none, with harm to none. And I want you all to know that. I want you to practice that, that do whatever you will to make your life better, make your life happy, make the people's life around you happy, but harm none. And this is why Bast is in the universe. She makes sure that there's no harm to none. She and Sekhmet, who is a lion goddess, will stand before the energy of the altar and say, oh, no, you don't. We're going to stop you. We're going to make you do it right, with love, with perfect love and perfect trust. I'm just feeling the energy coming, the love and the energy coming back to me. I can feel all of you out there knowing that what I've said has touched your hearts too.
And in answer to one of your wishes, if you'd like to put together a question and answer show, we can start planning it, and you can do that.
So mote it be. Yes, I do. I wish that. Because I think that part of what Conway speaks is about. I mean, I want to know that somebody's listening, and I want to know, I want feedback. I want to hear from the audience, the people out there, as Nora Desmond would say, the people out there in the dark. I want to know what you think, what you say, what questions you have, how I can help you. As a high priest, that's my duty, to help, to serve. I am called Shemsu. Shemsu means servant of the temple. It doesn't mean I'm royalty, nobility, blah, blah, blah. What it means is I serve both the higher forces above us and around us and you. That's my job. And I take it, as you can see, extremely seriously.
Yes, you do. Then we will start planning that show forthwith, and it shall be a reality.
You are the God of these things, and I leave my will and my fate to your hands, good Hercules.
We are friends and together on a journey. So we will all succeed together, and it's good to help ourselves with whatever challenges we're confronting and to offer opportunities as they arise. And this way we stand a greater chance of succeeding with our quest.
Remember, on the Argos, Hercules was one of the navigators. People forget that. And here you are fulfilling your ancient duty. You, again, are the navigator of this great vessel we call Earth. You're making this happen. And I am grateful, because I could never have done this on my own, I don't think.
I think you could have, but I'm glad we're doing it together.
Mm-hmm.
Now, people will find their way to you in time, as they have throughout the ages. But how can you make it easier for them? How can they locate you? How can they find you? How can they connect with you? What services do you offer them?
Okay, let's do the services first. Number one, I am also a psychic. I can do medium work for you. I can do weddings, child blessings, what we call hand partings, which are divorce, as it were, divorce ceremonies. I also do funeral ceremonies. I am an Anubian priest as well. I have my rates and such on my chart, on my page. You can reach me on Facebook. Those are where I put most of my sites. There is Phone a Wizard, which is my tarot card and mediumship site. My main page, which is Michael K. Waterman. You'll see me wearing butterfly wings in a purple, I believe it's a purple hue that's there. And you'll see all my friends and such and my credentials, as it were. You can get me on my phone, which is 516-650-3691. I'm not afraid to do all that. There is a block, after all, there is a block function there. So if you're going to be weird, I'm going to block you. I also have mkwaterman@icloud.com. You can reach me through Hercules. Think that's where that's about as many resources at the moment I have. There is a Instagram and there is a TikTok, and I'm not finished with those, so I don't like to give those out.
Okay, fair enough. And thank you again for the wonderful ritual, for the depth of knowledge, for the humor, and for speaking from your heart. It was a very powerful and very set in a combination indeed. So thank you so much, my friend.
You're very welcome into all. Uncle Jacques Seneb, I always say this, it's life, health, and prosperity, and it's what I wish for all.
And as we say in Greek, yahara, which means pretty much the same. And thanks again to our wonderful audience, whether you're in our queue because you called in, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, whether you're going to find us and check us out later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And thanks again, Setna.
You're most welcome. It's always a pleasure.
Same here.
Take care.
You too.